Chael Anderson is a botanist and plant ecologist. She joins us periodically to talk about phenology, or what's going on in our woods and waters right now. Welcome, Chael.
Hi.
You want to talk to us about some porcupines?
Yeah.
Okay.
I do.
I would love to hear about
okay.
it.
Okay. This came to mind not because I saw one recently. The season, you know, Christmas and all the holidays leading up to the new year can be prickly, make people feel prickly.
And yes.
I got thinking about that the other day, and I thought, oh, I don't think I've ever really talked about porcupines. And they're not common up here, but they're certainly out there. And so I thought, oh, yeah, well, this would be in honor of prickly season. Let's talk about something prickly
okay.
that is an amazing creature of our landscape here. In my experience here in Cook County, they're not terribly common. And in part, that's probably due to our lack of their preferred winter food in particular, which is white pine. And so remember that porcupines are rodents. So they, if you think about other larger rodents, what do they eat in the winter? Well, they eat the inner bark of trees. So think about our beavers. And so they're really kind of a terrestrial beaver, in a sense, going after, in the wintertime, their preferred food is the inner bark of the white pine, but they definitely are known to eat the inner bark of maple, of jack pine, of even bur oak. I've read that they've even been, that's even been documented. So I'm sure that's duress, you know, that is the first place they would go. And also bear in mind that we're talking about, they're not like feeding on the trunk of a big tree. They're going to be up in a tree and going out sometimes onto the tiniest little limbs to try to get the tenderest parts. They're not chewing through that outer bark. That's not what they're interested in. They want that inner bark. So they have to be on the younger branches. You won't see them feeding in aspen. So they're not like beavers. They won't be after the aspen. Not really birch either. So they use different species, but they're still after that inner bark in the wintertime. Mm. In the summertime, they're eating plants of the forest floor. So they're herbivores. They're just grazing on whatever suits them best. But in the winter, it's that woody stuff. So they're pretty rotund, kind of stout animals with short legs. So in the wintertime, they don't go very far. You can imagine that going around in deep
snow would be a problem.
Although they are sporting about 30,000 quills as their protective garment, it's still when they're most vulnerable, mm-hmm. right? Is when they're, you know, down on the ground, easily visible, that kind of thing. So you're most often going to encounter them up in a tree. They do vocalize. They make grunts and chirps, and they click their teeth, but they're not loud. So I think that's partly why we maybe don't see them as often as we might, because even where there's decent habitat, they're kind of quiet. Their quills, of course, are their most prominent feature. As I said, 30,000. I mean, it's just amazing. And so these are these long, white quills with black tips, and at the tips are scaled. And the scales are free at the end, pointing away from the tip. So they act like barbs once they are implanted in something, and they actually pull themselves into whatever gets stuck in. So this is why either personally getting stuck with a porcupine quill or quills, or your pet or a wild animal trying to prey on porcupines is dangerous and really uncomfortable and can even be fatal. If an animal gets a mouthful of these things, they often get infected, and it can be devastating to an animal. So predators do not undertake preying on a porcupine lightly. Their chief enemy is the fisher. The fisher is the weasel, so this is our biggest weasel that is extant, you know, exists here in Minnesota. And they have definitely evolved the skills to overturn a porcupine. So the quills do not grow on the belly, and so that's where they're most vulnerable. So they flip the porcupine and tear open its belly to eviscerate it, basically to kill it. Because that's the only really safe way to do it. But again, they're not going to be the most popular prey here because we don't have that many. But interesting that these two species are a match in a way. Porcupines are not an easy prey, but they're not invulnerable to attack. A baby porcupine is born with quills, but they don't harden until just after they're born. Every mother is breathing a big sigh of relief.
Yes.
Yeah, which I think is just so fascinating, you know, that the timing of all these things and, you know, the environment of the womb versus the environment of the air and all this chemistry, really, that's going on and these reactions. So, yeah, baby porcupines are born with their quills, just not hard yet. And when they're not up in trees feeding or down on the ground feeding during the summer, but particularly in the winter, they are going to be spending time in their den, because that's their place of protection from the weather and extra insulation. So it could be under a downed log on the ground. It could be in a stump, but also up in a tree cavity. I've also encountered them where a porcupine, and sometimes two, they're generally solitary animals, but they will sometimes share a den. It might be under a rock overhang, a big rock overhang. I've also encountered good evidence of them spending time there. And if you think about wintertime and the snow building up and kind of drifting down, and so, gosh, you could pretty much have an actual veil over the opening of an overhang, but then have your single kind of passage in there, but be able to get out pretty easily too if you had to. A good indication of porcupines being in that sort of situation or whatever kind of situation or even at the base of a tree is, generally speaking, there's a monster-sized pile of scat. One place, the base of a very large white pine that had a cavity up way higher than I could peek in, huge pile of scat at the base of it. So I don't know if they had pushed it out, you know, kind of dug it out. They're not really known for cleaning out their scat. They just kind of live in their scat, which is pretty dry. So think of like a snowshoe hare pellet in the wintertime. So it's just dry, woody food. And it's about that same size.
Okay.
Yeah. Because they have this great protective coat of quills, unlike other rodents, small rodents, who reproduce in high numbers because mortality is really high, since they have few predators and can live to be 10 years old, they typically only have one young each year. So they're very different from the smaller rodents in that regard, that they have a much lower reproductive rate because of their longer lives. So again, more like the beavers, although even, you know, fewer young than beaver litters typically are. So because we don't have all that many around, typically I don't hear people saying, oh, I have a problem with, you know, when they get into plantations or something of their preferred species, then they can be thought of as a nuisance or some problem. But the amount of damage that they do, you know, they might in a given winter spend time on one or two trees. It's not as though they're going through acres of, you know, trees at a time. If their feeding results in mortality, they really are part of what contributes to the creation of snags for all kinds of other things, which utilize the resources that of various kinds that snags, dead trees of all sizes provide. So they're just a wonderful part of our really amazing neighborhood of friends.
Jill Anderson regularly fills us in on current events in the woods. Thank you for talking to us about porcupines.
You're welcome.